It's a couple of minutes after 8 o'clock. The Mornings with Ed show on a Wednesday. And Wednesday with a lot of important stuff to cover. We expect. And she delivers. We're talking to the Forbes Best in State. And I'll tell you what that is in a second. Right now, President and CEO of Wealthwise Financial Services and Wealthwise Moment, Laureen Gilbert in the house. Good morning, Laureen. Thank you for calling in this morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I could not be more excited. Please, please, please tell us about the Forbes Best in State Award.
Right. Well, Forbes ranks advisors. They have a female top advisor list, which I made for the first time in 2020, and I was very excited about that. And then they also have a Forbes Best in State ranking that ranks advisors by state, and we made that for the first time this year in 2021. So that just came out, and I was very excited to see my name on there. Wasn't expecting that, didn't even know that we were in the running for it, and someone emailed me a congratulations because I hadn't even seen it posted. But anyway, now we know, and we did make that list. So thanks for acknowledging
and
that.
And allow me, please, to give you a little celebration here. We're all totally stoked
for you.
And that is huge. And I will now introduce you as the Forbes Best in State. That's the way to introduce you from now on. And I'm delighted for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
A lot of stuff has happened in the last week since we spoke last. Tell us, first of all, about Citibank. They made a huge blunder last summer, and they sent too much money, I guess 100 times too much money. Tell us about what happened with Citibank.
You know, it's really one of those unbelievable stories, Ed, that a publicly traded company like Citi could make such a mistake, and they wired out $900 million, can't get back $500 million that they need to get back because it was such a big mistake. And they took it to court, and the judge said, sorry, these companies don't have to send it back, because the court's reasoning was, you must have known what you were doing. There's no way you didn't know. Now, I can't imagine that they would have done that intentionally. It does seem like it's a black swan type event that this large company, publicly traded company, made a huge blunder. But then you have to ask, if that was a blunder, do you want to own a company like that if you're an investor?
Right.
Because that is a huge mistake. That is an unbelievable mistake. And by the way, three different people had to sign off on that wire going out. It's not like it was one person's doing. So the whole story sounds very odd.
Okay, so Citibank had filed their lawsuit back in August seeking everybody to return the funds, or specifically the Revlon's lenders. But they're out. That's done. Once the court ruled yesterday, they're out of it. They're done, right? There is no appeal?
Well, they're going to appeal.
Okay.
No, they're going to appeal it.
Okay.
They're absolutely going to appeal it. They're going to continue to fight it. But it certainly is a large mistake.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
How do you make a $500 million mistake? So,
So
total of $900 million, but $500 million was going to these Revlon lenders. And what they intended, supposedly, what they were trying to do was send an interest payment. Instead, they sent, this big chunk of change.
Yeah, that's an unbelievable mistake. $500 million. That's huge. That's huge.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We've been talking all year long since the pandemic began. We've been talking about the airline industry, and they suffered their worst year ever. Yet they somehow are awash in cash. And I guess that in some ways is a good thing, in some ways not a good thing. But I'm wondering, is it specifically like a struggling family that gets flooded with credit card offers? You know, like, is that what's happened with the airlines?
Well, it's a little bit like the idea of the stimulus, right? That the airlines are receiving some funding that's trying to keep them afloat, and they're trying to do everything they can to stay afloat, like some families are also trying to stay afloat. And so, they're kind of chug-a-logging along, but they're still, what I'll say about the airlines is it's going to take a long time for the airlines to recover. And I'll also say that is a tough one to make money on with very low margins. So from an investment perspective, I would tell people, I think the airline industry is going to take quite a while to recover. It could be 2 to 3 years before we see that area recover. And I'll also add that we are more favorable towards other areas that have been hit hard, such as, you know, more like the cruise liners, the casinos, the hotels, the entertainment industry, those kinds of things. So they're all kind of in the same bucket as far as investments are concerned. But the one that I think is going to have the hardest time to recover out of those will be the airline.
And do you base that because they have sold bonds, they've borrowed money, mortgaged their planes, and they've really mortgaged their assets and sold additional shares of stock? Is that a highly unusual move for an industry that's in that position?
No. I mean, that's what you do, okay. Right? You raise capital. You either raise capital through equity or you raise capital through fixed income. So it's either, you know, bonds where you're receiving money and promising to pay with interest, right, in the form of a bond, or you're issuing shares of stock and people are buying the stock and then they're part owner of the company. So those are different ways to capitalize a company. So that's very normal for a company, you know, trying to raise capital. That's how you do it. Or you get money from the government, right? Or some kind of loan externally. So though that part is normal, what I'm saying is there's a structural issue of the airline industry being very hard to make money at. And so, you know, while it's a needed industry, I think investors need to think about whether that's an investment that they'd want to make.
Okay, thank you. And Goldman Sachs, I want to talk about them for a second. They're known mainly for advising the affluent on how to manage their money and for helping engineer big, huge deals on Wall Street. They now have unveiled a new robo-advisor for the average investor. Marcus Invest is an offshoot of the company's Marcus retail banking arm. And they're going to let Goldman customers buy exchange-traded funds with as little as $1,000. Is this basically that they saw an idea that Robin had and they had to not miss the boat on this?
Well, I'd say they're getting on the bandwagon of, like you mentioned, it's really a robo-type platform. And that has been in the making for a number of years. You know, we have a robo-platform. And last week, you and I spoke about even the small investor has this opportunity to use these robo platforms with a small amount of money. And so what I'd say is all the firms out there are now looking at how can they implement a robo platform. And now that it's been proven that it's taken, it's taken to the market, it's taken to the retail investor, and it's a way for the retail investor to use a small amount of money to invest, Goldman Sachs doesn't want to miss out on that. And what I'll point out there is you're absolutely accurate that Goldman historically has targeted the high net worth families. Right. But here's the thing, Ed. Those high net worth families have kids, right, and they have grandkids. And guess who's going to inherit the wealth?
Yes.
Those people. So if a company doesn't have some type of robo platform to bring in the next generation and the generation after that, they're going to lose those larger assets. And that's the real strategy there, Ed, is to bring in the younger generation to feel comfortable with the brand of Goldman Sachs or Wealthwise or whatever brand it is. Right. And then eventually they would inherit the money and kind of transition to those other platforms.
Clarity. Thank you so much for that. I asked you off air. I asked you this question, and I've now put it together to where I think I can sound coherent asking you on air. What's happened is Goldman Sachs strategists have estimated that Americans are sitting on $1.5 trillion in excess or forced savings, and they forecast that that figure is going to climb to about $2.4 trillion. A couple of things. I've always thought that saving money was a good thing. And are Americans ready to spend the savings that they've stashed away during the pandemic? Isn't it a good thing to save?
Such a great question, Ed. And the problem is there are competing concerns. So what's good for the economy is for people to spend the money. Okay. What might be good for an individual household might be to save money. And when you look, Bloomberg just did a study or a poll. They just did a poll asking people, you know, how would you spend your next stimulus check? And it was so curious to see people's answers because most of it was go on a vacation, which would be spending. There were a number of different answers, and saving the money was one of them too. And so you've got this split view. And what I think this whole pandemic did from a financial perspective for families is made people realize how close they were to either the unemployment line or even potentially being homeless or just not being able to make it financially. I think it was a real wake-up call across America as to how thinly sheltered people were with their finances, and that they may not have had enough in a savings account or in their investment accounts, et cetera. So I think you are seeing this increased savings rate because of it. But I'll also say on the flip side of that is that Americans were really good at spending money. And so when we get money in hand, we like to spend it. So what I'll say is just like what happened in Japan, if the savings rate gets too high, the GDP level goes down. Same in China. So some of the Asian countries, they've had historically very high savings rate, and GDP was lower, let's say in Japan. That can impact our GDP if we don't spend enough. Still, over two-thirds, about 70% of our economy is generated from consumer spending. So our GDP, 70% of GDP, is spending. So I'll say that's where I'll leave it. I'll say savings is good, but spending is good for the economy.
I'm a spender. Yeah, mm-hmm. my rainy day fund is in a drought right now. I'm a spender.
Okay, well then, you know, and that's why I say for some individuals, it may be the wisest thing to do to put some money aside, you know, and maybe split it up. Save some, spend some, right?
Like your parents taught you growing up, right? You know, put a little away for a rainy day there. One of the many things we have in common is our love for music. And you posted something on your site that started off by talking about records and the flip side of records. And we've done something here on the program in the last several weeks, the flip side. We've been playing the B-sides of songs. You talk about the B-sides of the economy. So I'd love to go over this with you a little bit.
On side A,
you've got the stock market performance. So last week, major stock indexes here in the United States, the Standard & Poor's 500, the Dow Jones Industrial, the NASDAQ Composite, they finished at record highs. Side A says that was happy news for investors. What say you, Side B?
Yeah, Side B would be that we have had such a run-up in the market. And I'll say, you know, you can either look back over the last decade, but then, of course, the pandemic hit, market took a big dive. And then let's just say from there, we've seen incredible returns since the decline last March. And so now there's the concern that prices have shot up so much. Is that sustainable? And now that we have so much speculative investing, where is that all going to end? Is there a bubble in certain areas of the market? And will that bubble burst? So that would be the flip side.
Okay. All right. And
I would say, though, let me just say that my opinion is we're still bullish for the year, right, with areas of certain pockets of bubbles that we do see existing, but on the overall markets, and when we compare that, let's just say, to the dot-com bubble, we're still very far away from that kind of over-exuberance.
Okay. All right. I got another one for you. The stimulus, a $1.9 trillion stimulus package is in the works, obviously, which could prevent unnecessary financial hardship and mitigate future economic risks. What's the flip side of that?
The flip side is it's probably going to take longer than most people think that it's going to take. And, you know, with that, that means that that the recovery might take longer. And with that, too, with the stimulus coming into the markets, the added stimulus could end up creating inflation into our markets. So the inflation side of things is something that we are looking at very carefully.
Okay. All right. I got one more for you. I'll bug you with one more. Infrastructure spending. So work has begun on a $2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure plan that's intended to create jobs and rebuild our transportation networks. What's the flip side of an infrastructure spending plan?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, infrastructure is definitely needed in the United States, and that's actually one of the reasons that China did as well as they did last year and had a positive GDP, whereas the rest of the globe had a negative GDP. And the reason is they created an infrastructure package. They put a lot of money into infrastructure. They also lowered taxes, so they did two things last year that really helped them. And the U.S. Needs to follow suit, and actually Biden has commented on that China will eat our lunch if we don't put together some kind of infrastructure package. So that's definitely needed, and everybody agrees with that. The issue is, how do you pay for it?
Right.
So if we do pass an infrastructure package, the flip side of that is that probably means there's going to be increased taxation along with the spending, because there's got to be a way to pay for it. Right. So that could hurt both businesses and consumers.
To my audience, I'm telling you, there is a reason she is the Forbes Best in State. Laureen Gilbert, President, CEO of Wealthwise Financial Services. How do we find you?
WealthwiseFinancial.com or 949-748-1177.
As always, Laureen, you add clarity and logic to the discussion. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ed. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Sounds good.
8:23 the time. It's the Mornings with Ed Show.